The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
What Purim represents, both the Tzora, the great difficulty that faced Klal Yisrael, and the Yeshua, the miracle and the salvation that they had on Purim, in many ways is different from other such episodes and confrontations that we find in the history of Klal Yisrael. Basically, this is underlined in the Gemara in Masechet Megillah, and Daf Yud Dalet Omer Aleph, where the Gemara says that the Tzora and the Yeshua of Purim was greater even than that of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus. But the Gemara says that if one is obligated to say Hallel on Pesach, then how much more so should one be obligated to say Hallel on Purim, because Me Abdul Lecherus Me Mavis Lechaim Lokolske. Pesach, the Yetzias Mitzrayim, there Paray did not want to kill the Jews. He wanted to be Meshabed them, enslave them. Actually, even to enslave them was not an end in its own. He was more interested in just controlling them, that they shouldn't become too powerful and overrun the country. But I put him there. The decree of Haman was Lahashmid Lahare Galabet, to totally annihilate the Jewish nation. So the Gemara says, therefore, if we say Hallel on Pesach, which is May Abdus Lecherus, from slavery to freedom, then how much more so are we required to say Hallel on Purim, which is Mimavis Lechaim, from death to life. And from there the Gemara goes on to explanations as to why we do not say Hallel on Purim. But at any rate, what do we see? That the Gemara here is not only comparing Purim, the greatness of Purim, to that of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, but in a dimension even far greater. And the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus, is the Yesod, is the foundation of Klal Yisrael. So it has its own distinction and its own dimension. And I would like this evening to mention a few points, a few ways in which the sages bring out this distinction, and what we can learn from this. The Gemara brings in Masechet Megillah, Daf Yud Aleph, Rav Nachman by Yitzchok, Posach Lei Pischo Lahai Pashosu Mehocha. There the sages were seeking various psukim, various passages in our Ksuvim, in the Chumash, and in the Nach, which bring out some unique point in Purim. And he brings from a posuk from Tehillim, Perek Kuf Chav Dalet Beis. It states as follows: It It's in the capital Shir Hamales LeDavid Lule Hashem Shohayalanu. It states as follows: Lule Hashem Shohayalanu Bekubaleinu Odom. If not, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with us when a man rose up against us. And Rav Nachman says this refers to Purim. Why? Not that Hashem was with us, Bikum Aleinu Odom, when a man rose up against us. Why does this necessarily refer to Purim? Many times in our history, people have risen up against us. There was Parai. There was Nebuchadnezzar, Melech Bavel, the king of Bavel, who destroyed our first base of Megdush. There was Titus, Antiochus, king of the Romans, became the king of the Greeks, who rose up against our Beis HaMikdash. Many, many times there were those that stood up against us. So the Gemara explains, David HaMelech wrote in Tehillim, Bikum Aleinu Odom V'Lei Melech. If not, that Hashem was with us when a man rose up against us. All other times it was a king. This was a man. The story of Purim, the one that rose up against us was Haman, not Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus played second role. It was Haman was the instigator. This was Haman's plot. He was successful in getting the king Ahasuerus to go along with him. But this was definitely the enemy was Haman. And Haman was not a king. Therefore it was Bikum Aleinu Odom. A man rose up against us. Now the question is, so what is so important about that? What is so distinctive? What's the difference if a man rises up against us or a king? And I would say just to the contrary. I would say it's more dangerous when a king rises up against us than a man. So the Maral Miprag explains. A king, his first priority is the survival of his kingship. Like we know, politicians, what's the top of the list? Political survival. And a king is not a king if he has no nation. A king constantly not only wants to rule over his nation, he wants to expand his empire, broaden his empire. So a king doesn't go and annihilate nations, annihilate people. If they try to revolt against him, he might punish them. This is why you find when great kings of the past went and they conquered countries, they annexed those countries. They annexed those populations. They added those populations to their empires. When a man rises up against someone, he's not interested in a kingdom. Actually, we don't find Haman was interested in the throne. We don't find that this was a political plot to allow Haman to gain more political strength in the Malchus, in the empire. He was interested in annihilation. And therefore, a man is more dangerous than a king. And this is what the Chazal tell us in Masechet Avos, Perigimel Mishnah Beis, Le'olam Mispalel Bishlei Malchus, Shimein Meirem Malchus, Ish Esreihu Chayim Belay. We are obligated all of the time to pray for the welfare of the king, the welfare of the government. Be it a good government, not so good government, but it's still a government. Because if not for a government, the sages tell us, then every man will try to swallow up his fellow man entirely. Actually, history is learning this. This lesson is being taught today. Many parts of the world where we are finding out that a bad government is still better than no government. Bad government is not good either. But at least it prevents one man from swallowing up the other. No government. Then you get situations like you find in certain parts of the world. If we go into this a little deeper, the Maharal explains. This has to do with the nature of man himself. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created man, and he's called a gever, a gavra. And a gever means Reitzel his gabir. He wants to be the gibor. He wants to be the strong one. He created man yechidi, as an alone in the world. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I am the king of the upper worlds. You will be the king of this world. But he created man alone. And man's basic nature is to rule alone. And that's why if man follows his basic nature, he constantly fights with other people. Other people are a threat to him. This, said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, increased the population of the world. This was not for the honor of man. This was for his honor. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. The Shevesh Yetzorah. He created a world that it should be populated and that all of the world should be his subjects, should serve him. So this is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor. If man accepts the yoke of Hashem, then he's interested in the population of the world and bringing the world to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If man doesn't accept the yoke of the Almighty and he's not interested in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's honor and he's only interested in his own honor, then he becomes the destroyer of mankind. And this was Haman. And therefore the Chazal in their wisdom said it was a very, very dangerous situation. B'kum aleinu odom v'lei melech. When a man rose up against us who had the power of the king behind him, and it was not a king. It's a very good likelihood, I could make a suggestion, that this was true with Hitler v'chavereif, Hitler and his henchmen, Yimach Shemam. They were not royalty, they were not kings. Historically, they write that Hitler and his henchmen were thugs, a very low class of people. And they had taken over the government. They came in to rule through a democracy. But once they got control, they rewrote the laws and they took over. And you see, he was interested in annihilation, to destroy. Further point, which the sages bring out, the Megillas Esther tells us who was Haman, this man. Haman ben Hamdoso Agogi. He was the son of Hamdoso from Agog. And who was Agog? Agog was the king of Amalek. He was a descendant of Amalek. Amalek was the grandson of Esav. Esav was the arch enemy of Yaakov. And in particular, Esav had many children. And many of these children
branched out. Some became great empires. From him came the Romans. Many were the arch enemies of Yaakov. But the one that hated Yaakov the most was his grandson Amalek. And it's for this reason that the Maral writes that in the Megillah it states in Esther Tess Posuk Yud, Haman is referred to as Sorer HaYehudim. Aseres says they hung the 10 children of Haman. Aseres b'nei Haman ben Amdoso Tzeirer HaYehudim. Tzeirer HaYehudim means the enemy of the Jews. That was his description. His description was Tzoreh Yehudim, the enemy of the Jews. He was a total, he was an enemy in totality. And the Pasuk in the Megillah it states in Esther it's in Perek Gimel but it states that Haman rose up to heights by the king v'chol avdei ha'melech asher b'shar ha'melech korim u'mishtachrim l'Haman. And all of the servants of the king would bow down to Haman. Umodchai le'ichra v'lishtachave. And Mordechai would not bow. Vayar Haman ki ein Mordechai kireo mishtachave lei. Vayimolei Haman chemo. And Haman saw that Mordechai does not bow to him. And he became full of anger. And in Pasuk Vav it says, "Va'yivez be'enom lishleach yod b'modchai levadoi." It was contemptible in his eyes to merely strike out at Mordechai alone. Ki gidu lei es am Mordechai, because it was told to him who the nation of Mordechai was. Va'yivakesh Haman lehashmid es kol ha'yehudim. And therefore Haman decided to kill all of the Jews, which were in the empire of Ahasuerus, the nation of Mordechai. Last year we gave a whole shiur on this. Just to mention one point. What does it mean? We see he became angry at Mordechai. Why? Because he became angry at Mordechai, so all of a sudden, like we can understand, maybe he wants to take revenge against Mordechai, maybe Mordechai's family. But all of a sudden, from there he goes, where he decides to destroy all of the Jews in Malchus Achashverosh. And do you know how many Jews were in Malchus Achashverosh? The sages tell us in the Gemara and Megillah that Achashverosh was a melech misefa ila matsefa. He ruled from one end of the world to the other. Kufkov Zayin Medina is 127 states, and this was the entire world. This means that every Jew in the world was in Malchus Achashverosh. What kind of thinking is that? No matter what kind of lunatic he could have been, that because he became angry at Mordechai, so he has decided now that I won't take revenge against Mordechai, but I will destroy every Jew in the world. So the Targum writes as follows on that Pasuk. Bahavachek Kadmoi. It was folly to Haman, Lahariges Mordechai Levadoi, to kill Mordechai alone. Why? Leishita yodai lemiktele yos modchai belechud. Arum chav yilei de modchai osim in Yaakov. Because it was told to him that Mordechai came from our forefather Yaakov. The shokal min esav abodavoi dohoman yos bichurosei ves bichosei. And Yaakov was the one who stole from his ancestor Esav the firstborn birthright and then the brochus. V'yehudoi inun amodemodchai. And the Jews, this is the nation of Mordechai, and these are the descendants of Yaakov that stole from my grandfather his firstborn birthright and all of his brachas, all of his blessings. Therefore, boy Homan, b'shitzo yos kol Yehudi di b'chol malchus achashverosh amod Mordechai. Therefore, Homan decided that it's not proper revenge merely to strike out against Mordechai, but he will strike out against the whole nation. Now in here tells us the Sheresh, the source of the hatred between Amalek and the seed of Esav and the Jew. And the Chazal tell us Amalek himself was the son of Eliphaz. Eliphaz was the son of Esav. And Esav had commanded his son, never forget what Yaakov did to me, and I want you to take revenge. And Eliphaz commanded his son Amalek to fulfill that. So Esav was fulfilling in his eyes what was a holy duty. This is what is meant, that when he became angry at Mordechai and he investigated and he found out that Mordechai is a Jew, so Vayives Beinav Lishlech Yod B'Mordechai Levadoi. It was folly in his eyes. It wasn't. That's not the full justice, merely to strike out at Mordechai. Mevake Shomon Lahashmir Es Kol HaYehudim. He will take revenge against all of the Jews because of this, because they are all guilty. And we find similarly that at the end of Parshas Bishalach, after Klal Yisrael came out of Egypt, and there were the great miracles, the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, and the downfall of Mitzrayim, of the Egyptians, and immediately Amalek came to fight with Israel. Now why? Why all of a sudden should Amalek come? We can understand that there were certain nations that lived in those vicinities, and they were afraid that Klal Yisrael will come and do the same to them as they did to the Egyptians, and they'll take the land perhaps. But this was not the case with Amalek. They became aggressors, but for what reason? The Medrash says and the Gemara says, Maro Amalek, the Medrash Lekachto, Maro Amalek, Lovay Lilochim in Israel, Kedei Linkaim Nikmas Esav Ziknai. They came to fight against Israel to take revenge for their grandfather Esav. Diksiv Ayistem Esav Es Yaakov. Esav hated Yaakov. And Eliphaz was the Bechor Esav. He was the firstborn. With Sivohu, this Gares in Bnei Yaakov, and he commanded his son Amalek to be a tzeder, to be an enemy of Yaakov. So, this, firstly, now we see that he was a man, and he was a man with the power of a king. Secondly, we see that he was the arch enemy of Israel, and this is why he is called Tzeder HaYehudim, the enemy of the Jews. A further point. the danger that Klal Yisrael found themselves in was incomparable from a number of aspects. First of all, the far-reaching effects of the danger. This we mentioned. He had plotted against all of the Jews of the world. Lahashmi lahareg al abed is kol yehudim. Minar adzokein tafinoshim, men, woman, and child. V'yem echod, to annihilate them on one day. Ushlolam leveis, and to usurp all of their assets, everything that they owned. Never will we be confronted with such a danger. The other kings, Melech Bovel, he wanted to enslave us, he wanted to send us into Golush. Even Melech Edom, also they took us for slaves, they wanted Yerushalayim. In other situations, tyrants that were also like Hitler, like we mentioned. Hitler also wanted to destroy every Jew in the world, but he didn't have the power. Here Haman had the power, because every Jew was a subject to Ahasuerus. Further, the Maral explains, this became a danger to the entire world, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu said when he created the world, if there will be a nation which will accept my Torah, Yeb HaShishi, on the sixth day of Sivan, then the world will carry on, the world will exist. But if there is no Torah in the world, Maksaraniya Sabriya Liteya Vavaihu, then I will return the creation to emptiness, to what it was before. And if there is no Yisrael, there is no Torah. So it was a danger for the entire world. This man was plotting, which would be the destruction of the world. But further, never have we come so close to this annihilation. The Megillah tells us it was, the decrees were sent out. They were already nichtov v'nechtam v'tabas ha-melech. They were already signed and they were sealed with the royal signet ring of the king. And something which was nichtov v'nechtam v'tabas ha-melech ein lo-hoshiv. And something which was already signed and sealed with the royal signet ring is irretrievable. We cannot reverse it. The date was already set. And the nations of the world were waiting for this opportunity to rise up against the Jews. Because of this, Ravashi in the Gemara says as follows. We have a posuk in Devarim, Dalet, posuk Lamed Dalet. It states, "Oh, Hanisa Lakim." Moshe is telling the people, "Hanisa Lakim Lavei Lakachas Legoy Mikerav Goy." Has any god ever performed such miracles to take out one nation, Mikerav Goy, from within another nation? Now this posuk is referring to the Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus. As it states further, B'maseis ba'esis b'mefsim b'lchoma b'yad chazokav z'roya netuya. With such great miracles and wonders, and with his strong hand and outstretched arm, like all he did in Egypt. So the pasuk is referring to the miracles of Egypt. But Ravashi
is saying there is also a remes, there is also a subtle inference here to Purim. Why? Because it states Goy mikerev Goy, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken out one nation from the inside of another nation. Kerev means inside. It does not say that he took out a nation, but he took out a Goy mikerev Goy, one nation from the inside of another nation. What does that refer to? So he says that refers to the story of Esther. We were already swallowed up by Haman and Ahasuerus. It was as if it had finished, everything was over. This was not a mere plot. The decrees were sent out. The decrees were signed. The decrees were sealed. The date was set. The people had received the decrees. So it was finished. We were already swallowed up by Haman. In that posuk, where Dovid HaMelech writes, "Bekum aleinu odom," when a man stood up against us, he says, "Azai chayim belo unu." If not for Hashem, he would have swallowed us alive. We were swallowed alive there. And it was basically too late to do anything. And this is what Moshe is prophesizing. Did any other God in the world ever do such miracles where he could save a whole nation from the inside of another nation? Like one day will take place with Esther and Mordechai. Now, what do we learn from this? Firstly, we learn from this that a Jew is never allowed to be mi'aish, to give up hope. No matter how bad a situation is, it could not have been worse than the situation of Purim. Every Jew in the world, without exception, was in danger, imminent danger, and already swallowed up by the enemy, by the arch enemy, and by a man who had the power of a king. So one must never give up hope. Secondly, what we learn from here is the bond that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has with Klal Yisrael is such a strong bond that can never be severed. And even when we are already swallowed up by another nation, he will come and retrieve us. Goy mikerem goy. And from here we see it. From Purim. Not from the other Yom Tovim. Because in the other Yom Tovim, things were never that bad. But in Purim we see it. And the Maal therefore explains, this is what the sages mean when they say, the darshan from the Megillah, lo yosuv zichro mizaro, that the remembrance of Purim will never cease, asidim kol ha-meedis libotl. There'll be a time when the Yom Tovim will not be so important to us anymore. But you may Purim, the days of Purim will never cease. There'll be a time when the Yom Tovim are not so important to us anymore, because they celebrate miracles of the past, which we will see greater miracles. The Gemara in Brachos brings. Gemara says, a man is walking along, and all of a sudden he's attacked. He's attacked by a wolf. He fights off the wolf, so he goes on his way and tells everybody the story of the wolf. Another week goes by, he's walking along, he's attacked by a lion. He fights off the lion. Doesn't tell anybody the story of the wolf anymore. He tells them of the lion. Another couple of weeks goes by and he's walking along. All of a sudden he's attacked by a cobra, a snake. Jumps on him. He fights him off. So he tells the people the adventure that he had with the snake. The rest blends into the background. When the Melech HaMashiach comes, we no longer will sing the praises at center stage of Parai or of our being saved from the kings of Babel or the king of the Romans. We'll be speaking of greater miracles. Now this all refers, he says, though, because the Moed, actually the word Moed comes from the word Va'ad, Biyud, Vino'aretishon, means coming together. Moed distinguishes a time, designates a time of the coming together of HaKadosh Baruch Hu with Israel. But Purim will always be in the forefront, because there'll never be a coming together of Hashem and Yisrael like there was in Purim. That no miracle will be able to equal, because Chaim Belaunu, we were already swallowed up by the arch enemy, and still HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. So therefore this is another unique point when it comes to the miracle of Purim. Go further. In the Megillas Esther, in Perechoth, in Perech Dalet, Posuk Tes Zayin, the decree went out, Mordechai found out about it, he sent it to Esther and told her to act immediately. She must go to the king and she must ask for rachamim, for compassion. And Esther said, not so easy. You don't go to a king like that, just like this. She can go, and if she's not summoned, it could be her head. And who says that he'll listen to her? So forth. Finally, Mordechai told her that she has to act now. There's no alternative, no options. So she said, if that's the case, Lech Knesis Kol Yehudim HaNimtzim B'Shushan, go and gather up all of the Jews in Shushan, Vitzuma Alai, and fast for us. V'Alteichel V'Altishtu Shleishish Yomim, Laila V'Yom, do not eat or drink for 3 days, day or night. Gam Ani V'Naresai Otzum Kein, and I and all my maidens also will fast. And then I will go to the king, even though it is in an illegal manner to go in such a fashion. What was the entire effort on behalf of Esther? And Mordechai also, because Mordechai answered. It states, "Vayavur Mordechai vayas kechol asher tzivsa olav Esther." Mordechai also did whatever Esther commanded. So, what was all of the effort, all of the endeavors of Esther, and Mordechai, and the Yehudim as they faced this danger, this great danger? It was all in tefillah uzo'oko, prayer and crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This was the purpose of the fast, the power of prayer. We see immediately after, it states, Vayhi bayem ha-shlishi, and it was on the third day of the fast, Vatilbash Esther Malchus, and Esther clothed herself in royalty. and she went to the courtyard of the king. Vatilbash Esther Malchus, she clothed herself in royalty. So the Gemara says, Rashi brings, Big Day Malchus, garments of royalty. But the sages are not satisfied with that, because if that was the case, it should say Vatilbash Esther Big Day Malchus, she clothed herself in garments of royalty. It says merely royalty. So they come with a drosha, and they say, what does it mean? Rabbi Seinu Omro, Omru Shalof Shesa Ruach HaKodesh. She clothed herself with Ruach HaKodesh Malchus, with the garments of HaKodesh Baruch Hu. In other words, she came to enormous heights, enormous spiritual heights. The Gemara brings in Megillah, Masechta Megillah, Daf Yud Dalet, Sheva Neviyes Omdel Yisrael. There were seven women that became prophetesses for Klal Yisrael. The Gemara brings, really, there were more. It brings the number of men and the number of women. Really, there were more. But it explains, Shenitzruchu Nevuasam Nederis. But we are speaking about those that became prophets, that their prophecies were needed for the generations they were written down. So there were seven great women that became prophets for Israel, and one of them was Esther. And Esther, where did she become a prophet? She became a prophet, the Beis Achashverosh, in the court, in the palace of Achashverosh. And the whole Megillas Esther, which was written, she had a lot to do in writing it. This becomes part of our Kisrei HaKodesh, part of our holy writings. Now we can ask a question. We're saying here that Esther rose up to enormous heights in Kedusha. Chochman, wisdom. Shlema Melech praises her wisdom. Chochmas Noshim Bonsu Beso. Mishle, he writes of the wisdom of Esther. It was her wisdom that saved us. So she came to enormous heights in wisdom, in Kedusha and sanctity, in Tara and purity. But where? Well, we can understand if this was in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash. We had prophets that were in the Beis HaMikdash, or during the time of the kings of Israel. Here we are speaking in Shushan HaBira. Shushan is a city in Iran. We are speaking in the court of a Melech Rosho, of an evil king, a world tyrant, but an evil person. And this is where she lived. And she was forced, she was abducted and forced to be his wife. How can this be? The answer to this, the Gemara tells us, this is something which they write is one of the prime points that we learn from Purim. Is Esther was a descendant of Rochel. Yaakov had four wives. Esther was a descendant of one of the two sons of Rochel, of Binyamin. Rochel had Yosef and Binyamin. And therefore, she had in her also the powers of Rochel. What were the unique powers of Rachel? It states that Rachel was the Akeres HaBayis. She was the one who would protect and unite Klal Yisrael, but not only in Eretz Yisrael, but anywhere, wherever they may go. It was for that reason that when she died, and Yaakov was traveling, and he wanted to wait to come to a city to bury her, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said no. B'derech Efras, you must bury her ala derech, right along the road, outside of the city. And Yaakov later on, Yaakov felt very bad about this, because later on when Yaakov was dying and he told Yosef, Yosef was her son, he says, I want you that when he dies you shall carry me out of Egypt. And then he found it necessary to explain, maybe you'll ask me if why am I so concerned that I should be buried in a specific place, and I did not take that concern for your mother and I buried her right along the road. So he explained, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded, it's not that I wanted to. And why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu command that Rachel should be born, should be buried on the roadside? Because when Klal Yisrael will go into the Golus, into the exile, as they are journeying out of Eretz Yisrael, they will pass her grave. And she will give them strength that wherever they go, she will be the center of the house that will guard the purity of the house and the unity of the house. It states she always is mispalel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and will be in the schus of her tefillos that Klal Yisrael will not assimilate in the Golus and they will come back to Eretz Yisrael. And this power we find in her son Yosef. Same thing happened to Yosef. Yosef also went into Golus. He was exiled. And he was exiled to be a slave in the house of Potiphar. And he was exiled to be a prisoner in the dungeon of Egypt. And he was exiled to be a mighty emperor in the court of Pharaoh. And there he gained power and he gained fame and status and unequaled wealth. They gathered up, the Gemara brings him, saw him, all of the wealth of the world. Yet Yosef never changed his ways. And secretly he studied Torah, he fulfilled the Torah, and he taught it to his sons in the house of Pharaoh. Kayim uraisu b'sisra, and this is what Esther did secretly. Publicly she was the queen of Modai and Poras. Secretly she was the daughter of Rachel. Never to waver. Because of this, she rose up to heights which were unequal in the history of Klal Yisrael. And only 7 women. And it counts amongst them such women as Sora, came to such heights. What do we learn from there? We learn from there that the power of the Jew can thrive wherever he is. You have those that always say, well, if I lived in such and such a place, then I would have been a great Jew. Or if I lived in such and such a time, then I would have been a great Jew. Or if I would be in Yerushalayim, then I would be a great Jew. Not true. Not true. Yosef was a great Jew, and he lived in the house, the royal house of Pare. Esther was a great Jewess, and she lived in the house of Achashverosh. Egypt, Iran, and this is the power that Rachel imbued them with. Now, one has to do with the other. This power of prayer. Because the Gemara brings out, it states that Esther was a great Sonua. She was a very private person, very secretive. You had to be. So did Yosef have to be. Publicly, he was a famous official, famous king. Privately, he fulfilled the entire Torah. And the same thing with Esther. Ein Esther Magadis. Magadis es. Amor es Mladato. Esther would never tell. Mordechai told her, never reveal who you are. Never reveal where you come from. Because she herself had come from royalty, from Shaul, King Saul. And he was hoping that Ahasuerus will think she's from the street. And he will send her away if she was refused to say where she's from. And if he'll find out she's from Shaul HaMelech, from a king of Israel, then for sure he'll keep her. Royalty thrives with other royalty. And no matter how much she was tempted, and Ahasuerus was capable of tempting, and this was not easy. She became the first lady. She became the most powerful queen in the world. And he had conquered the wealth of the world. And he tempted her with everything. Ein Esther Magadis. She would not tell. The Gemara says she had this power of concealment. Her own name means concealment. The Gemara says the word Esther, where does it come from? The word Hastir, Seser, means concealment. And it says that's also she inherited from Rachel, where Rachel was willing to sacrifice her whole life to conceal the shame of her sister Leah. That she gave Leah the signs of Yaakov when Lavan made the switch between them. The power of tefillah, of prayer. The sages tell us this is also a power of seser, of concealment. Why? Where does prayer come from? It comes from the nefesh of them. It comes from the innermost feelings of man, of his thoughts and his feelings. And they are not revealed. If a person talks, he can reveal them. But prayer is where you do not reveal them to others. You reveal them to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You tell them to Hashem. And they remain always concealed between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You speak to Him. This also is the power of the Nishtar. And in particular, the Chazal tell us this is the best tool against Amalek, because what is the power of Amalek? Amalek inherited, just like Esther inherits her power from Rachel and from Yaakov, Amalek inherits his power from Esau. And Yaakov Avinu said on Esav, when he saw Yaakov and he felt his hands and his arms, he said, these are the Yodayim Yidei Esav, these are the hands of Esav. When he heard Yaakov speak, he said, this is the Kol Yaakov, the voice of Yaakov. And the Chazal tell us the power of Esav is in his hands, the power of Yaakov is in his voice. Hands are what you use to reveal something, while the voice is used for that what is concealed. And the Chazal tell us, what does it mean the power of hands of Esav is in his hands? Because Yaakov told Esav, Al charbe chotichya, you shall live by the sword. Esav, Yitzchok, excuse me, told Esav, you shall live by the sword. This is Esav's power. But he told Yaakov, it would be very difficult to defeat Esav with the hands, with the sword, because that's his bracha, that's his way. Al charbe chotichya. Esav represents steel and iron. Milchoma, war. Yaakov, your weapon will be Hakol Kol Yaakov, the Kol Tefillah and the Kol Torah, the voice of prayer and the voice of Torah. Ukisha Hakol Kol Yaakov, when there is the voice of prayer and Torah, Ein Yodayim Shel Esav Sholtim Bay, and the hands of Yosef cannot, the hands of Esav cannot conquer. Kisha Ein Hakol Kol Yaakov, when there is not the voice of Yaakov, then the hands of Esav shall rule. Actually, there's a medrash in Echot Pesichto where one of the conquerors wanted to come and conquer Yerushalayim, and he said, send out to see if the children are studying Torah in the Tineges of Beis Rabban, in the Chadorim. If they are, then there's the Kol Yaakov and we cannot succeed. If they're not, then there'll be the Yadayim Shel Esav and we will succeed. This is what we find the Gemara brings, that when Moshe sent Yeshua at the end of Parshas Bishalach to go to war against Amalek, go and fight with them, so Moshe said, I will stay here. Moshe Aaron v'chur ole reisha giva, we will go up to the top of the hill. When Moshe raised his hands, Gova Yisrael, then Yisrael became victorious. Kasher yuniach yodai, when he brought down his hands, Gova Amalek, then Amalek started to win. So the Gemara asks, b'chi yodav shel Moshe neitzches hayu, what do the hands of Moshe have to do with it? So the Gemara answers, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah in the Medrash, when Moshe raised his hands, then everyone looked at his hands and everyone looked upwards, and they were mispalel to Hashem, and then there was the Kol Yaakov, and then they started to win the war. Moshe brought down his hands, then they no longer looked up, and then the hands of Esav became victorious. This is what the Gemara says here in Megillah, Masechta Megillah. Rav Masna Omar, Rav Masna said, he quotes a pasuk from Devarim Dalet Pasuk Zayin, Mi goy godol asher le elokim krevim elov, kashem elokeinu bechol koreinu elov. Moshe told the people, show me a nation which Hashem is so close to this nation that whenever they will call to him, he will answer. Where is there such a nation? The Master says this was an inference, a prophecy for Purim. Because what brought the whole salvation? Here we had a situation which was totally beyond repair. There's nothing you could do about it. Every Jew in the world was already signed and sealed his fate. Now what changed it? We don't see anything in the beginning. If there was a war, if there was a plot, what changed it? The only thing that changed it was the Tzumu Ulai, go and fast and be mispalo to Hashem, and then I will go to the king. For 3 days they fasted and they were mispalo, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered. Therefore Moshe said, Mi Gai Godel, can you find such a great nation, Asher Le Elokim craving a love that has a God close to them, Kashem Elokeinu like our God, Behol Kereinu a love, is all you have to do is call out to him and he answers. A worse situation in world history, and the whole nation called out to him, and 3 days later here they were answered. So this is what Moshe was prophesizing. So this is another great point, two great points that we learn from the Megillah. First of all, the Keach HaTfilah, the power of prayer, and in particular against our arch enemy Esav and Amalek. And secondly, how great the power is that Rachel imbued in her children, that wherever Klal Yisrael go, they still have the potential not only to rise in heights, but to rise to the greatest heights possible, as we see here with Mordechai and Esther in the house of Ahasuerus. Another point, we see something else strange in the whole episode. In the Megillas Esther it states, Hachedish Hashem Nepach Lohem. They celebrate the great miracle of the month, Hachedish Hashem Nepach Lohem, of the month which was turned upside down. Yogan Lesimcha, Mevel Leontif. Here we were faced with the ultimate in tragedy, and all of a sudden we ended up with a yantif. We were faced with the ultimate of avelus, of churban, and all of a sudden we ended up on top. And it states in another pasuk, v'napechu, everything that Haman plotted was v'napechu, was just turned upside down on him. Now, what does this mean? Because two great miracles took place in Purim. I mean, there were many, but two divisions of miracles. Firstly, we were freed from the Tzorah. Our enemy was eliminated. Haman was hung. His 10 children were hung. The decree, right, it couldn't be retrieved. So another decree was sent out in the name of the king, for all Jews on that day to stand up and defend themselves, and the king sanctions this. So, good. Our Tzorah was eliminated. Would have been sufficient for that. But we see more than that. We see all of a sudden Ahasuerus takes the royal ring that he gave to Haman and he gives it to Mordechai. Mordechai is elevated to become the king, the Mishnah Lamelech, the second in command, the second most powerful man in the world. Esther carries on to be a greater queen than ever, more prestige than ever. the royal house that Haman had is given to Mordechai. And Ahasuerus is interested in doing good for the Jews. This is what is meant, the Napechu. And the Jews became so prestigious. Rabbi Miyamamoritz Mishadi. Many of the nations went and they converted themselves. They wanted to become Jews. Now, it's also interesting that we find the same thing by Yosef. We were speaking of Yosef. Yosef was in the dungeon. Would have been sufficient if he would have been let out of the dungeon. But from the dungeon, he became the viceroy of the most powerful king in the world at that time. And everything that followed. Now, Rabbi Yochanan in Masechta Megillah, he brings a pasuk. It's a pasuk from Tehillim, Tzarech Ches Gimel, where he says, this is what it's referring to. It states, Zohar Chazdei Vemunosei Leveish Yisrael. You should remember the great chesed and emunosai and the great faithfulness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed to the house of Israel. The entire world, every corner of the world, saw this great salvation. Now again, simple sense, it would be referring to Egypt. No. He says it's referring to Purim. The whole world saw this miracle. Even though it was an Eis Nistar, it was a concealed miracle. There were no unnatural events. There was no splitting of the waters. There were no 10 plagues. But still the entire world saw this miracle. Why? Because Ahasuerus ruled over the entire world. And these letters were sent out to the entire world. So the whole world received a letter saying that Haman had given instructions with the authority of the king to stand up and kill all of the Jews. On one day, the 13th of Adar, and to take all of their spoils. This the whole world saw. All of a sudden, the whole world is receiving letters saying that the Mordechai has commanded with the authority of the king that Jews are to stand up b'chol medina medina b'chol ir v'ir wherever they are and to slaughter any person that stands up against them. And this has the royal sanction of the king Ahasuerus. And then they want to know what's happened. What's going on? And all of a sudden Mordechai was the one that Haman wanted to kill. What happened to Haman? Haman's dead. And his 10 kids. But what's Mordechai doing here? Well, Mordechai is the viceroy, but wasn't Haman the viceroy? Well, what's going on? And the whole world knew this. Because Haman made sure to send letters to every malucha, to every empire, and to every state in the world. And all of a sudden, the people start talking. And we see how true it is, they said, that Klal Yisrael belongs to Hashem. And this is the great chesed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does for his nation. And it can't be coincidence, all of these things. If it was just that Sora and the Sora disappeared is one thing. But here we see everything that Haman had plotted was fulfilled to the last letter. But instead, to Haman, it was fulfilled for Mordechai. So that's what Rabbi Yechanan said. Zecher chazdei v'mnosai levesh Yisrael rocholafsei oresei sheshuasa lakeinu. Remember the chesed and the faithfulness that Hashem showed to Beis Yisrael. All corners of the world saw his great Yeshua. Actually, the Maral says a little further depth in this, because once Haman was eliminated, and Haman represented Amalek, which is called Reishis HaGoyim, who is the source of the evil in the nations of the world. So once that was eliminated, then Klal Yisrael could rise sky high. So that's another important development that took place during Purim. Further, something else very interesting. It says in Keheles, Perek Beis Pasuchov Vov, it says, Kilo Odom Shetev Lafonov Nosan Chochma Vedas Vesimcha. Shlema Melech said that to man, that there is so much goodness in front, to the man who is good before Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives him wisdom and knowledge and happiness. But to the one who is not good in the eyes of Hashem, Nosan Inyan Lasei Felichnais Loseis Letev Lifnei Elokim, he gives him the ability to acquire great wealth, and then this is taken from him and given to the other one. Gamze Hevel Rus Ruach, this also is, Shlema Melech said, is an emptiness of the world. What does all of this mean? So Rashi explains here in Gelis. He says, to the person who wants to go the right way, and he wants to do what's right in the eyes of Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps him. Habo letayir mesayin, they say. Someone wants to come and do good, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps him. What does he do? He gives him lev lasik b'teira b'mitzvahs. He gives him a heart to understand Torah. He helps to motivate him for Torah, to do mitzvahs. Lismayach b'chelke. He gives him simcha. What does it mean, simcha? To be happy with his lot. That when he eats and he drinks, b'mayachal b'mishta, he enjoys it. Not like the way of the others, that when they eat, they look at what the other person is eating. When he drinks, they look at what the other one drinks. And they're always bedaiga, they're always lacking. Now, this is what he gives him, ubiksus nikia. He gives him when a person puts on clean clothing. See, he has simcha from it. This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does to the one who wants to go in his way. Ulacheta. But to the one who doesn't, Nosan Inyun, he gives him minig v'daigo. He makes him all the time lacking. Cheta means lacking. All the time lacking. So therefore, what will he do? He will constantly go to acquire more wealth. He goes for more and for more and more. And he becomes very wealthy. And then in the end, HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes all this wealth and gives it to the first one. And Rashi says that's what happened with Haman. Matosem Esther es Mordechai al Beis Haman. The entire house, palace of Haman was given over to Mordechai. And Shlema Melech said, Gamze echod min ha'avelim shenos lebriya shem ha'melim v'acha netel. This is also one of the empty things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives to the world, where people will labor and it ends up by someone else. Now, the Maral explains. Someone who wants to walk in the way of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he's interested in mitzvahs. He's interested in doing what's right. He's interested in uprightness and integrity. He's interested in the wisdom of the Torah. And he's really not so prone to gathering up great wealth, because these things do not interest him that much. He's more interested in spiritual heights than the mere physical world. And he's satisfied with what he has. So this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. He lets him acquire wisdom and mitzvahs, what he wants. Then he finds another person who is not interested in all of this, but would rather have this world, and he's always wants more. Yesh lamona reitz masai. He has 100, he wants 200. 200, he wants 400. Eiv kesev leizba kesev. He has silver, he wants more silver. And to him, he gives success. So that one goes and builds for himself an empire of wealth. Then he takes it away from him and he gives it to the righteous. And Shlomo HaMelech says, Nebuch, so many people fall into this trap where they labor and labor in their selfish ways only that it should be left for someone else. And this way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give the tzaddik, the righteous, physical wealth also. This is what Shlomo HaMelech said. And the Gemara says that the illustration of this is the Rav Kahana says is Megillas Esther. Because it states that everything that Haman had acquired, Haman was the one to convince the king to give his ring away. Haman was the one to convince the king to give so much power to the viceroy. Haman was the one to convince the king to give him a royal palace. Mordechai would have not been so capable at these things. In the end, it was all given to Mordechai. That's something else that we can learn. And then one final point. Mishle, it says in Mishle Chortes Beis, it states Birvei Sadikim Yismacho Om. When righteous become powerful, then the nation Yismacho Om, then the nation rejoices. Ubim shol rosho. But when the wicked become powerful, ye onach om, then the nation becomes broken with sorrow. This pasuk in the Gemara, it says Rava, says this refers to the Megillas Esther. Because it states, Mordechai yotzim lifnei hamelech. When Mordechai became powerful, and he walked in front of the king, it states, La'ehudim ha'isha eire v'simcha v'sosin mikor. There was great rejoicing to all of the Jews of the world. When Haman became powerful, what does it say? V'hamelech v'haman yoshvu lishtos. The king and Haman sat down to drink. And the city of Shushan wept. Now, the Maral brings out an interesting point. He says, we can ask a question on the Megillas Esther. This Achashverosh, what kind of person was he? Look, a good man, under no circumstances can we say. Because he was willing to be an accomplice to annihilate every Jew in the world. So that's for sure. Rashi was for sure. But it's a little inexplicable. Why? Because in the beginning of the Megillas Esther, we see that he was ra la Yehudim. He had hatred for the Jews. He was willing to be an accomplice to annihilate every Jew in the world. But yet, at the end of the story, at the end of the Megillas Esther, we see that he was tame la'yudim. He was very good to the Jews. It states that he raised up Mordechai and Esther, and he gave Mordechai his ring, and it states that Mordechai yotzem lifnei ha'melech, Mordechai went out in the name of the king, and it states that Mordechai became a spokesman for Achashverus, not only for the Jews, for the world. And it states, V'chol gedulas Mordechai, all of the greatness of Mordechai that he did for the Jews and that he did for everyone were written in the archives, in the royal archives of Mordechai Paras of Syria and Persia. So what happened here? So the Maral says, this is, he says, and this is a very, very important principle in Purim. He says, this is what Shlomo HaMelech said. When tzaddikim, when righteous people move into positions of power, this brings great rejoicing, Yismach HaOm, great rejoicing to the people of the world, because righteousness flourishes in the world. And as righteousness flourishes in the world, it influences everyone. When rishus, the wicked, move into positions of power, this makes the nations of the world into broken people. Yonach ha'am, om. Because the influences of evil flourish in the world. When Haman rose to power, influences of evil flourished in the world. And that in turn influenced Achashverosh to become even a greater Oshra than he was. And therefore he was Ra La Yehudim. He became an arch enemy of the Jews. When Mordechai rose to power and influence, and he started to dictate policy for the world, influences of righteousness flourished in the world. And that had an influence on Achashverosh. And he became Tov La Yehudim. He became good to the Jews. So from here we see the importance of what can be done when, who are the powers to be? Who are those that are influencing the world? If it's Tzedek or if it's Resha. This was the difference between the beginning of the Megillas Esther and the end of the Megillas Esther, as it states, Mordechai Yotzo Limilifnei HaMelech. Mordechai walked in the name of the king, and through this brought simcha to all of the Jews, and this was a simcha for the world. These are some of the unique points that we can learn from in the simcha Purim. We should all be zeicher to have a freilicha Purim and to once again see the great Yeshuas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at PO Box 66226, Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.